Timing is everything. We are taught this from a very early age. Students know this. Comedians know this. Lovers know this. Entrepreneurs know this. You can have a great idea, but if it comes to you the day after the essay is due, it will not matter. You can have the funniest line, but if you miss the moment, it will fall flat. You can have a great opening line, but it won't matter if the object of your desire already has a full dance card. You can have the most brilliant invention or cause or book in your head, but if it's too far before its time or has missed its moment, it will not matter. Timing is everything. If the key to success is being in the right place at the right time, then at least half of success is timing. Now, as it happens, you are all in the right place at the right time because you are here on the Sunday morning after the full moon, after Passover. That means it's Easter day. You are in the right place at the right time, so at least today you are all fabulously successful. Timing is everything. Even God must experience this. For some of us, the moment of searching, the moment of being open to the possibility of God exactly intersects with a moment in which we find a way to be connected to a spiritual community. Somehow, it seems as though for other folks, that chance gets missed. We raise our kids in the church. Don't leave. Stay right there. Hoping that we can hold them here just long enough that their moment of openness will somehow happen while we still have them here. And frankly, that's true for everybody. We receive each next person through the doors of this house, hoping to be a presence of God for them, just in case that what brought them here was their moment of openness and possibility. But we never know whether it is or it isn't. We just keep on trying at it because timing is everything. And our task as disciples is to try to be present to everyone's moment of openness to God. The women who come to the tomb on Easter morning have fabulous timing. They get the Easter equivalent of catching Santa Claus just before he goes up the chimney. They come out at daybreak, the earliest possible moment for them to attend to the body of their friend. Of course, leave it to the women to be the only ones brave enough to go and able to get up early enough. And the only ones resilient enough to do a task that needs doing, caring for the body of a dead friend. But what they find is that they have happened upon the scene just as Jesus has somehow been raised and returned to God. We don't know exactly who the young man is that they encounter. Could be an angel. Could be one of those three mysterious men that met up with Sarah and Abraham so long ago at the very beginning of this story. Whoever it was, the story wants us to understand that this person is at least a messenger of something that has just happened, and just possibly the agent by means of which it has happened. And the women show up just as he's finishing the sweeping up. Their timing could not possibly be better. We never find out whether those women come to have some kind of special authority or some kind of special position because they got there first and saw what was happening. It certainly must have made the men feel afraid of them, because they spent the next 1,900 years or so sidelining the women. That is likely because these three women gave proof of a basic and uncomfortable theological fact. In order to have great timing in your relationship with God, the first condition is that you actually have to show up for the meeting. Paul, on the other hand, does not have great timing. At least he doesn't think so. Paul's counted among the apostles, but he always feels a little bit defensive about the basic fact that he never met, he never spoke with, he never touched or walked with Jesus. He wasn't one of those 12 disciples. He came along later. That's what he means when he describes himself as one untimely born. He's out there trying to build churches and bring people the message about Jesus, and at least some of them must be asking him, "Yeah, but were you one of those original 12 people?" Paul's worried that his timing wasn't good enough to get people to listen to him. So the question for us in our own time is, which of these describes us? What is your own sense of your own timing? The kind of Easter experience that we want is the kind the women had. We want God, or at least an angel, to show up when we walk out in the morning. We want our questions not to be just answered, but overwhelmed. We want to be brought out of the tomb of our doubts and uncertainties into the light of a joyful and certain faith. But sometimes it feels like the Easter experience we get is more like Paul's. We feel a sneaking suspicion that we've missed our moment, that our timing is a little bit off. We keep going out to the place where we think we might run into God, but God somehow never seems to show up. Now, of course, there are a couple of possibilities here, a couple of things that lie in between these two extremes. One is that in just the same way that you have to make your own luck, when it comes to feeling our faith get resurrected, you have to make your own timing. Now, you think that what I'm going to say now is you have to come to church more often. Well, of course, I'd like that. I'd like that. But actually, it's not what I mean. Instead, what I mean is we all have to have the discipline to pay more attention to the examples of grace in the lives of the people around us, the people we know, the people who are complete strangers. It's not so much a question of being in the same place at the same time as often as you can stand it. It's more like a question of being in every place all the time with your eyes open, approaching the world in a certain way. Think about the things that you practice. Maybe you practice yoga. Maybe you practice running. Maybe you practice the piano. Here is a certain fact about humans. Whatever we practice, we get better at. So if what you practice is looking for reasons to be discouraged or doubtful, then you will certainly find them. If what you practice is feeding that little voice inside of you that makes you afraid to appear foolish to the people around you, then that is what you will get good at. Being afraid. And if what you practice is the discipline of looking for the little signs of God's grace all around you, of looking for the young man sitting there, or the old woman working there, or the child playing there, or whoever it is you meet when you get up and go out into the garden of your life, who shows you something gracious and true about God's life in the world. Well then, if you practice that, that's what you'll get good at. So that's one of the possibilities. That's one way to find Easter in your heart again. But I said there were two. Here's the other one. It's that you're not like the women in this story. And you're not even like Paul with his terrible timing. There's one other part of the story. It may just be that for some people, you are that young man just finishing up in the tomb. Friends, we are Christians. Don't let anybody take the full meaning of that away from us. Don't let people who use that word as a club for beating up on someone else ever take that away from us. They've only learned small parts of the whole story, the parts that agree with the world they want to have. We are Christians, and that means that we are supposed to be agents of resurrection and not just beneficiaries of it. You may not know it, you may never know it, but you may be exactly that person that someone else comes across when they walk out into the garden of their doubts and darkness and despair. You are the sign for them. That darkness does not engulf us. That grace is possible in the world. That the snow finally does melt. That God, the God who created us out of love and redeemed us out of the same love, does not give up on us. That message is timeless. That hope is forever. You can't show up too early or too late for it. You just have to look. Amen.